From theunce.com, this is the Unce Podcast. Featuring artist interviews, unreleased tracks, and previews of the biggest events in electronic music. Available every week at theunce.com. Hello, welcome to the Unce Podcast. I'm your host, Anand Harsh. My guest today is B-Rock, Ben Ruttner from the indie house act The Knox. His partnership with James Patterson began back in college, and the duo spent much of the last few years cultivating artists through their production work, but now they've stepped out into the spotlight with the stunning Magic EP and some thrilling festival performances. The duo just released a new single, The Feeling, out now on iTunes and Beatport. The Knox will be hitting Jay-Z's Made in America festival on Sunday in Philly, then they go on the road with Dragonette throughout the rest of September. In October, they'll be doing DJ sets on the road with Paper Diamond as part of his Night Vision tour. Today's show is brought to you by Silver Rapper and React Presents, bringing you the third installment of the North Coast Music Festival, beginning Friday in Chicago's Union Park. This year's headliners include Pretty Lights, Girl Talk, STS9, Axwell, Steve Angelo, and huge after parties featuring Dr. P, Yodo, Paul Oakenfold, Elliot Lip, and many more. Tickets still available online at northcoastfestival.com. All right, let's get to the interview. So your new single, The Feeling, just dropped on Beatport and iTunes. It's a bubbly, fun summer anthem, no doubt. But what I want to know is how are we progressing? How does this new cut demonstrate the evolution of The Knox from that Magic EP, which itself is quite magical? It's a testament to where you've been. You know, how do you go a step beyond?
This one, you can tell by listening to it, comparing it to stuff off Magic, that it's a little bit more of a dance record overall and less of a kind of a pop song like so much of the stuff on the Magic EP was. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit more repetitiveness and more driving and hits a little harder. Which, I mean, all the other, our older stuff has that, those elements too, but recently I think it's just, since we've been getting more and more into the whole dance world and been playing more festivals and been touring around and seeing other artists and DJs, it's a, kind of inspires you to want to make stuff that's really going to make people jump, so to speak, but we still want to keep it our own style with our own, you know, like our touch of, you know, the soul influences and the disco and stuff like that, but just... I think you're going to start hearing stuff from us that all hits a little bit harder.
You've gotten a ton of favorable reviews over the past couple of years. The blogs love you. Hype Machine loves you. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like you've tapped into this sound where you're like, yeah, we're hitting that sweet spot with you know, soulful lyrics and catchy hooks? Or do you feel like that Knox sound is still a work in progress?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think we definitely have our touch, and I think people can tell pretty quickly if it's one of our songs, whether it's from James's vocals or just from the style of production in general. But I do think that we're going to keep seeing ourselves change. And I mean, we're still pretty young when it comes to the art thing. And I think it's just going to keep evolving. But I think overall we have this main sound, and I think we have touched on a lot of the, you know, the blogs and stuff like that and gotten our respect in that world. But we want to, really try to take it to the next level within the next year or so and get recognition everywhere.
How is this material coming about? Is it truly collaborative, or are you both going into your rooms and banging something out and then bringing it to the other and saying, add your flavor? How's that collaborative process working?
Usually it's pretty much we go in together from the start. We have an awesome studio space that we work out of in Chinatown, and it's kind of like our, you know, our daily routine to just kind of wake up and both go to the studio and see what we can come up with when we're in town, at least. This one, The Feeling, actually came from when we were in LA working with some friends, and we were just messing around at their studio, and we actually wrote the main chord progression and some of the instrumentation together with a buddy of ours. But overall, we're pretty collaborative dudes, and we've been doing this together for about, whether it's before the Knox stuff, we were producing stuff for other people together. So it's probably been like 6 or 7 years working together. So kind of two brains have become one. I mean, there are a lot of times where we will start something on our own, and then someone else will come in and work on it. But more so, we'll actually do it together from the get-go. I'm alive when I'm high on your love.
love like the lights in the city above. For the first time, shine on everyone. Here it comes, here it comes, here it comes. And I don't wanna fight it.
Here it comes, here it comes.
I ain't got a reason.
Here it comes, here it comes.
I don't wanna fight it.
The Feeling from the Knox, out now on Beatport and iTunes.
Has electronic music, both producing and DJing, always been your passion? Or are you attacking it from another angle, whether it be playing instruments or being in punk bands or something in high school?
I've always been into DJing, actually. I'm way more of a DJ than a musician in that sense. J-Pat has been playing instruments his whole life. I play drums, and then I got really into DJing at a young age and was doing a lot of hip hop DJing, and that got into kind of some house stuff. And that's kind of my angle of it. So we've both always been performers in our own way. I used to play in punk bands as a kid, and J-Pat played and at his church, played organ and all this stuff. But I think it comes from everything. I think it comes from us wanting to make, like, when our live show was kind of a mix of live and DJ in a sense, where it's continuous and it's pumping and it's a crowd pleaser, but at the same time, we're doing a lot of stuff live on stage. So I think we try to kind of find a happy medium while also keeping it original.
So you two met at the new school. Did you come together and realize you had shared interests, and that's where the production team came from? Or were you individually doing work with mainstream artists and doing production for them and remixing? I kind of want to dig into how people who are, you know, young and starting out can sort of move their way into the mainstream and get into these positions where they can be working with big artists and doing some cool behind the scenes work.
J-Pat and I both, from a young age, I think, knew what we wanted to do. It was one of those things where I was making beats when I was 13 years old, 14, and J-Pat was doing the same thing on our own. And then we met together in New York through a mutual friend. And at that time, we were both doing our own thing. There's a lot of hip hop stuff and a lot of kind of like pop R&B, and a lot of trying to really hustle and place tracks with artists. I mean, that when you're making that kind of music and you're working for other artists, the goal is just to place a track. You know, you're trying to sell your beats, or not even sell, just get someone to use it. You know, you just want to hear someone on your track.
Sure.
And all that really was coming to New York and just hustling, just like really working. And I was emailing the shit. I used to just like go all over, whether it's websites, labels, and just email every address on there. Even before that, I was mailing demos out when I was 15 to A&Rs of different labels, like all this, like these underground indie labels and stuff. And just really, I knew what I wanted. I knew what I wanted to do right away. And I think the main advice I would give to anyone would actually be just to kind of keep doing it. And I feel like nowadays with the internet and with all this like quick success, a lot of people are thinking it's a lot quicker and easier than it really is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people think, oh, I'm just going to like make this hot track and put on the internet. I'm going to become a success. And that does happen sometimes. But then those, a lot of the times, those are the cases where you never hear from them again a year later. And I think we're lucky because we've become really well-rounded when it comes to the industry, because we've seen it all from the pop A&R side of things. You know, we had a record that we co-wrote that was in the top 40. We signed a publishing deal. We did that whole thing. We had an artist we were developing that signed to Columbia, and then he got dropped, and we dealt with that whole thing. And then now, being artists ourselves, it's like we've really been in every – we also have our own label. Mm-hmm. So it's really we just have our hands in every pot and have seen kind of every side of it, whether it's the label side of things or the artist side of things or the producer side of things. And I think it's really having an understanding of the world and where it's going. And I think where it's going is that people, you got to kind of be able to do everything. You got to kind of know everything. You can't just sit in your room and make a song and expect that it's going to change the world, or, you know, which is a hard reality sometimes, because there's so many people coming out with stuff, and I feel like a lot of people think it's hard to get heard just because there is so much stuff and so much content, and people are so ADD nowadays with music. But I think it's the whole range of things. You have to understand that you have to have the live show, you have to have the image, you have to have the internet presence, you have to have the music, you know, and more importantly, obviously it's the music, but nowadays there's a lot of other things that are just as important.
Sure. Do you have a shoebox full of rejection letters that you're going to take on stage when you win a Grammy and just burn it? Take that, motherfuckers.
I do have a couple of those, man. And it's funny. I used to send demo. I sent my first demo. One of them was to A-Track when he had to be 18 years old, I think. I was like 13.
Sure, yeah.
I sent it to him, and he like gave me back a drop, which is like him like, yo, what's up? It's A-Track. And he was like so young. It was on a cassette, I remember. I still have the cassette, and it's funny because I'll never forget that. And he judged my first DJ battle when I was younger. And that's like when he was still like super hip hopped out and everything, and now it's funny because we kind of run in the same circle when it comes to the world we're both in now.
Yeah, both in suits.
Yeah, exactly.
Geronimo from the Knox and Fred Falk. Tell me about working with Fred Falk. I mean, was this in studio, or was that more of an over the internet thing?
Yeah, that was in the studio. We actually met him because he had remixed our single Bright Side. We have always, I mean, he's a huge inspiration, and we've always been a huge fan. And we met him, and we were at South by Southwest, and he had a DJ gig, and one of our friends knew his manager, and somehow we ended up backstage, and he was DJing, and we were like, yo, we're the guys that you remixed. And he was like, oh, I love you guys, blah, blah. I'm coming to New York for like 3 days. We just try to get in the studio. And at first we're like, oh, it's not really going to happen. He's probably busy as hell. Mm-hmm. And then he actually came to New York and we were in the studio for just 2 days. And actually maybe it was only 1 day. And that in the beginning of Geronimo happened. And we probably got it together. We had 1 day in the studio and we probably got to like 70% or 60% of the song. And then when he left, he had to go back to France and we did our part. We like worked a little bit more on it. We wrote the vocal part and then sent it back to him. Then he put his last touch on it. It was really painless and very natural, which was really cool. A lot of times doing stuff on the internet, you know, it'll get put off for weeks and weeks because everyone's busy and no one gets to it. But we were both really passionate about the song and we want to do more stuff with him and he's super down too. So
how does that work? I mean, you're for all intents and purposes, strangers. You meet up, you say what's up, and then you walk into the studio and it's kind of like you're both used to different equipment.
Yeah.
There might even be language issues. I mean, how do you get started? Does somebody have to have a strong idea to sort of set things off?
Yeah, there's usually a jumping point, like especially when it's a lot of people in the studio, you know, this expression, so many cooks in the kitchen or whatever. It's like,
right.
You got to let someone kind of take the lead at the beginning. And he actually had that one synth line that's in Geronimo. He already had from some other track. And we just took that and ran with that. But I think we're all used to, I mean, he's a producer as well as not just a remixer. Like he's worked with a lot of other artists, like writing stuff with them. And he had just got back from LA from doing some like pop writing sessions and stuff. I think, and we had done our share of that, you know, being in the studio, like it's kind of like being on a blind date. Your publisher will send you in the studio with some random writer and be like, all right, now make a hit, you know?
Yeah.
And I think we were both used to that. And lots of times those can go really bad because like you're just not from the same world or you just don't have the same ears. But I think with Fred, it's like we were both so much on the same page when it comes, you know, like he's insanely influenced by Daft Punk and so are we. And we're influenced by him and we're huge French house guys and he's loves like vocal electronic music, so and we write a lot of vocal stuff, so I think it just is one of those things where it just worked. You know, there definitely have been times where we've been in the studio even for like 3 days in a row where you just leave and you feel like it's a waste of 3 days, but this was one of those freak moments. Or even the name of the song, we have a picture of Geronimo hanging on our wall and he just like pointed at it. I was like, who's that? And said Geronimo, and he's like, that's the name of the song.
And it rolls off the tongue.
Yeah, and it works. So, and it kind of gave that vibe. And then we wrote the whole song around that fucking picture. So.
Debut EP Magic. Check out the video at theunce.com. We just premiered the video recap of South by Southwest and Ultra set to R.O.Y.L. Rest of Your Life on the Unce last week. By the way, I think J-Pat was wearing a Lance Herbstrong shirt, which is super cool on its own.
Those are the homies.
I can't imagine two more different scenes. South by is crammed with industry people, everyone's trying to be cool and find out what's going to be cool, and then Ultra is just about getting down. Yeah. How did your experiences differ at these two huge but vastly different events?
Well, we're kind of like veterans when it comes to South By, because like I said, we used to produce this other artist that we played in his band, and we did the South By thing, and he was a little bit more of like an indie pop guy. I think now, I mean, South By is definitely still that way, but now, even with all the dance stuff happening, there's still, those kids are going to South By too, and because it's just taking over all the festivals, I think, a little bit.
Yeah.
But we also are in this place where we can get away with playing. Like at South By, we played live, and we did our live set, and it was with that band St. Lucia and some other more kind of indie electronic stuff, which we can fit in with. And then we go to Ultra, and we were DJing, and we just play kind of the big room stuff and the bangers. And it's fun that we can kind of dance in between the two things. It can be dangerous at times because, you know, you don't want to be jack of all trades and master of none. But I think we're kind of in a cool place where we can hang with the with that scene, and then also be in with the dance guys and share those stages too.
That's absolutely been on my mind. I mean, do you then feel very comfortable in both settings? Do you feel like you're best paired with an indie group or best paired with a DJ, or do you feel like for the future of the Nox sound that you can straddle that line and you're not going to get lost? Being different is an advantage and not a disadvantage in this case, as you were saying, jack of all trades, master of none. Do you feel like your brand can sort of propel itself in between these two worlds?
Yeah, I think so. I kind of think that's the goal. And I also think a lot of these people get stuck in these genres where there's so many of these micro genres where you're just like a dubstep DJ, and then all of a sudden you want to try to break out a little bit, and you realize all your fans don't like anything except dubstep. You know what I mean? And then it's like, even with us, we kind of experienced that putting out Geronimo was a little heavier of a song for us and more of a dance record. And like, our fans didn't all gravitate towards it right away, but it also opened us up to some new fans. And a lot of our fans did like it. But I think we are in that place, which is kind of like, you know, almost like, I don't know what a good example is, almost like M83 or The Rapture or sure. Some, I mean, they're even more kind of bandy than us, but
yeah.
But you see them on bills with all electronic acts, and you see them on bills with all bands sometimes.
The cooler bills, yeah.
Yeah, which is cool. And we definitely don't want to get stuck. I mean, I love the dance world and we love DJing, but we really don't want to get stuck in that world where it's just like we're making house music. And especially right now with like everyone and their mother making house music and doing that. And we're definitely trying to keep to ourselves. But at the same time, like, we're talking about doing collaborations with a lot of dance guys, and it's cool. I think it's a cool mix because we can collab with them, and at the same time, we could collab with an indie artist and have put them on a track, etc.
Is pop a bad word?
No, I don't think so. I think pop is a different word than it used to be. I think now everything is, I mean, it's almost like indie music is the new pop, you know?
Yeah,
it's like,
tell me about it.
It's like the pop. Nowadays, it's like there's the pop that's like, you know, the five songs you hear over and over on the radio, and then there's also the pop, like the stuff that breaks through the radio, which has started off really cool. I mean, look at Ellie Goulding. I never thought she'd have a number one record.
We've been hearing that song on the festival circuit for a year and a half.
Yeah, we toured with her 2 years ago, right? When that we were with her when she played that song live for her first time.
Wow.
Because she had just, it was a bonus song on her on when she put the record out in the States, and now it's a hit, which is awesome, you know. And I think that's really cool, and I think that's a place where we'd like to be, where we can build our career for 2 years, and 2 years from now you might hear Dancing with a DJ on the radio, you know, or whatever. And I think it's like this the whole pop thing. I grew up on pop in a sense, you know. I grew up with a lot of classic rock and kind of pop, older pop rock, and J-Pat listened to a lot of Motown and soul stuff, which was all pop sensible music, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's kind of, pop is getting cool again. I think it has been becoming cool again recently. Before it was like, oh, if you're not indie you're nothing. But I think the way you can produce pop, I think it's now, because of the production techniques that people have, you can make pop really sound cool and different and still be catchy and still be a song that you could play for your little brother as well as your mom, you know.
Sure. Along those same lines, for years, people producing and remixing pop tunes have been studio rats and out of the public conscience,
yeah,
for the most part. Now, in this age where the producer gets to be in the video, do you feel like finally the real artists are getting the credit where the credit's due? Or do you think it's just a phase and pop stars will always be the attraction, the draw, the top dog?
No, I think it's great because especially, I mean, for being a producer is such an art now, almost sometimes way more than it is to be a quote artist. Especially in the pop world, you know, these producers are doing 10 times more work than the girl that's paid to come in the studio and just sing the part that this guy wrote for her. mm-hmm. like, you know, they put on her face in the video. So I think that's awesome. And I think a lot of that also comes from either dance music, because I was so producer based, or hip hop also, because when hip hop had this huge explosion, it was all of a sudden like the beats were making these tracks. And more recently than not, I mean, like when Kanye and Timbaland and all these dudes started putting out albums, it was like, whoa, like who, these are producers, like these producers are shining, which is awesome, I think. And I think it's really deserved.
Do you have an idea of the direction you're going in next? I mean, you've got all these options. You can go for more touring, or focus on the full length, or even focus on your label. I imagine you feel like you're being torn in many directions at once.
Yeah, we do actually have a lot going on in it. I think right now, since summer has been kind of just a madness with shows and festivals, we got our last tour in September. Actually, not really last tour. We're touring in September with Dragonette, which is going to be a nationwide tour. And mm-hmm. we go for a little run with Paper Diamond, which is more of a DJ thing.
Yeah.
And then we're going to be around. We're going to Australia for a little bit. But overall, we're going to really try to be focusing on making music right now and try to put out a new body of work. Not necessarily an album, so to speak, because we feel like it's still a little early, you know?
Yeah.
For dance music, it's like you can really get away with keeping on feeding people, whether it's singles or EPs. You know, and putting out an album is like such a statement, and it makes, like I said, our sound is still changing. And we feel like if we put out an album, we're going to be saying this is us forever, almost, or for now. So I think for now we're gonna do another EP. We've got a couple more collaborations coming out with other dance guys. We did some tracks with Alex Metric. We did a track. We're doing a track right now with the Savoy guys and a couple other things. And yeah, and just keeping putting music out. We got a lot of new remixes coming out, and just keeping it up. And I think everything we put out, we just see more and more of a reaction. You know, even from watching the feeling on SoundCloud, the second it hit, it was like got 50,000 plays in 5 days or something, which is a doubles or something what the last song did. So it's exciting.
Yeah, it's incredible.
People are listening and people are sharing, and every time we do something, we get more people. So I think that's the plan until we have that fan base where it's big enough where you can just drop an album and it's going to get heard. You know, I mean, look at someone like Zedd or Skrillex. I know these are really more heavy dance guys, but they just put out EPs and free music for so long. And then finally, I don't think Skrillex has even put out an album. Has he? I mean, he put out EP.
The EPs, yeah, but not a full length, certainly
so,
not.
You know, but now when he does, it's going to be fucking listened to, you know, and it's going to be heard, obviously. And same with Zedd, I think it's just putting out his full length. And a lot of these dance, I mean, Calvin hasn't put out an album. Calvin Harris has just been doing singles since his last stuff, his old album. So it's cool. I think it's exciting that we can just put out music, and with the internet it's great because we can literally finish a song and have it out within the next week. So I think the focus is really just to be making music and getting it out there while still trying to spread the word while by playing on the road, you know.
Absolutely. And we're looking forward to the Savoy collaboration. We're looking forward to shows with Dragonette and Paper Diamond, just straddling that line all the way down.
Literally. That's a perfect example, I think, those two toys.
Yeah, absolutely. Ben Ruttner, B-Rock from the Knox, thank you so much for being on the Uns podcast. It was a delight.
Of course. Thanks for having me, man.
Dancing with the DJ from Knox debut EP Magic. Their new single The Feeling is out now on Beatport and iTunes. Special thanks go to Ben David Fenwick with Giant Step Press, and of course my guest Ben B-Rock Ruttner. The Knox will be on tour with Dragonette and Paper Diamond, and you can head over to the Unts to see their South by Southwest and Ultra Festival recap video. Don't forget, today's show is brought to you by North Coast Music Festival from React Presents and Silver Rapper, taking place this weekend in beautiful Union Park in Chicago, Illinois. Headliners include Pretty Lights, Steve Aoki, Knife Party, Excision, Chucky, just a really cool lineup going large for Labor Day.
Tickets at northcoastfestival.com. Please visit theunce.com for news, artist profiles, tour dates, and now tickets to some of the biggest shows across the electronic music spectrum. And go ahead and subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. Write us a review. Tell us what you think of the show. If you have any questions, comments, or complaints about the program, you'd like to be a guest on the Unce podcast, or you'd like to sponsor an episode, contact me at anand@theunce.com. A-N-A-N-D @theunce.com. Join the conversation at the Unce podcast on Twitter. We'll catch you next week.